So I thought I'd talk about the West Ukrainian fetish. Now, opposing naked aggression is important and the right thing to do. However, for the Western leaders, so those not in the East I'm speaking of, abdicating responsibility for your own country and then fetishizing a foreign land is not. And also, it's very weird. And I thought we'd have a look at it now, because I feel like it's been enough time that the emotional impact of Ukraine is not what's driving this, by the looks of it.
No.
So we'll start off just by mentioning the fact that government buildings flying Ukrainian flags, this was the news breaking at the time, I believe, of the invasion started. Last time I went to London, they're all still there, and they're everywhere. Like, it's not just one or two. Yeah. It's every government building.
I go back up north and there's just random Ukrainian flags hanging around places. I've even seen driving past one house in the countryside. They've got these little gargoyles on the sides and it's just got, they've got Ukrainian beanies on them.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of this. And I'm talking specifically about the government stuff there in regards to their specific fetish. And if we go to the next one here, we can see the fact that, of course, we have now given over £2 billion in aid to Ukraine for fighting their war. Whereas at the same time in the UK, things aren't going good. People are starting to struggle. And this is a leftist account ripping on Boris Johnson. But the question is asked by Nick Ferrari. And to be honest, I think it's actually a good question and a terrible answer by Boris. So let's play.
No country on the planet has sent more financial aid, military aid to the Ukraine than the United Kingdom. Reports of £2 billion and rising. Yet back home, we also hear that pensioners spend all day in the library because they can't afford to heat the home. And one man set fire to some driftwood to try and get warm. To those who say you're very good at supporting Ukraine, but you're lamentably poor at supporting your own people, how would you respond?
Nick, what we've got to do right now is help people through the aftershocks of the COVID pandemic, just as we help people through COVID. And we will. And we will have the maximum energy, effort, ingenuity to help the British people through them. And everybody knows how tough it can be right now, but we're going to get through it just as we got through COVID.
We will struggle through.
Yeah, no, it's basically just like, why aren't you helping our own people? He just goes, we are, except they're not.
Well, the idea that he's helping their own, well, recently all they've done is raise taxes. It's like, great. That's
all they've done is raise taxes. We've got massive inflation, but quick, let's get a load of money and send it over somewhere foreign.
Yeah, and this isn't to say that, you know, geopolitically it isn't a good move in any other given time, but it's the scale of mismanagement that has led to this position being kind of untenable. And if we go forward, we can see some of that. So as you mentioned, the inflation has now reached 9% in the UK. Fantastic.
It's not great.
No, it's really bad. So anyone whose pay has now gone down 9%, everything's more expensive, 9%, fantastic, wonderful.
Well, it will get worse. I'm just going to say that because people think inflation is the prices rising. No, inflation is inflating the money supply. Yep. The rising prices happens afterwards.
That's exactly what I'm going on to, as fact. So we go to the next one. We have the Bank of England who are like, oh, bro, it's just the prices. We have no control over that.
Mm-hmm.
The Bank of England here warning of apocalyptic global food shortages. Who's to blame? Governor Andrew Bailey says he's helpless in the face of rising inflation. Absolutely helpless. The governor of the Bank of England, the man who controls the currency supply, he's got no tools. He can't be responsible. If we go to the next one, we can see the fact that nope, the obvious BS. I've mentioned before, I subscribe to Tick's notion of inflation because it's correct, which is you inflate the currency supply and more currency supply equals inflation. The prices go up in response to you increasing the currency supply.
Yes,
printing of the money.
Because the actual subjective value of each unit of the currency goes down because there's more of it, so this one means less now. And then the Cantillon effect, of course, means that you get it so that it only really benefits people in the financial spheres, people who are already in a good place, people who are already wealthy. And then by the time it gets to the plebs, like you or I,
too bad.
We're screwed over.
Yeah, it's not the greedy business owner putting up his prices or the greedy worker demanding more money that is the inflation. No, it's the increase in the money.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that you printed it all. So it's just ridiculous to say that he's helpless in all of this. If you go the next way, there's also the Eat Two Meals a Day campaign. Seems to be a thing again. At least this is according to someone who was on LBC talking to Nick Ferrari about this, some expert, who said that the cost of living crisis is now causing to about 1 to 2 million Britons to not eat meals or to have to skip meals. I don't know what statistics you're getting from this, but this is just something that's been reported, and genuinely, yeah, I'm not surprised.
Things are
getting absolutely terrible.
To be fair, in the name of subsistence, I've been only eating about two proper meals a day for, like, years now. Mm. To be fair, I don't think it's normal to eat three meals a day, like three proper full meals. Maybe you have a sandwich in the middle of the day, but
it's not a sign of luxury.
No, it certainly isn't.
It's not a sign of a country doing incredibly well. It's fact it was a campaign the North Koreans had at one point as well, just to mention. But
oh, great, we're copying the North Koreans now. Oh, no.
But let's go to the next one, because we also have the fact that also just continues to depress me, but I'll mention it again, which is Britons are still poorer than their counterparts in 2007 ever were. This is 15 years after the financial crash happening.
Yep.
In 2007, 2008. And still not recovered in the UK. The Americans doing better, the British not.
Wait, so you're telling me that increased government intervention in the economy after a crash that was specifically caused by government interventions, if you actually read about it, didn't help?
No.
Great.
Yeah, and that's Britain, which only gave £2 billion in aid to Ukraine, which at the time, as Nick Ferrari said, was the most that anyone gave, but the Americans have obviously given much more. And they're not doing much better, of course, because the mismanagement there is even worse. If we go to the next one, we have the United States being on 8.3% inflation. Now, this is according to this report, although I imagine it's still going to go up and keep going up.
And obviously, the actual price is rising. This is just average, because if you look at something like fuel prices, which I travel all around the country a lot in my car, is pretty important to me. They've gone up massively, far more than 8.3%, far more than 9%. So sure, that's draining me.
But that's to do with the fact that the industry's been in such a weird place, given the price went negative and all of that.
But it's not great when inflation is happening at the same time that there are massive supply issues with
for fuel and energy as well. It's not great. So those things do combine. If we go to the next one as well, we also have the fact that we had Marjorie Taylor Greene speaking, if you scroll up on this, in which she says our open border and fentanyl is pouring across it is killing Americans in record numbers, and Biden doesn't care. And Dan Crenshaw says this. And then Dan Crenshaw responds to this here by someone saying that, yeah, but you sound off about that stuff and then send $40 billion to Ukraine, and ratioed him there. And Dan Crenshaw responds with, yeah, because investing in the destruction of our adversary's military without losing a single American troop strikes me as a good idea. You should feel the same.
Who says that Russia has to be an adversary in the modern era?
Well, they have engaged in naked aggression, so it is right to oppose naked aggression where it happens. But the fact that this is the thing, like at any other given time in American history in which the United States is being managed slightly better, to say it mildly, then this is obviously like the easy, simple thing to do. You know, sending missiles into Syria to make everyone pipe down under Trump, for example. Mm. Like, it costs money, but it's not a problem because everything's going well. But that's because you're managing it well. Whereas the complete mismanagement that has happened because of the lockdowns, it's not because of COVID, it's because of the lockdowns, and then the mismanagement of the economy since and the political system, this is just terrible, terrible optics, obviously.
Yeah, and this is the prevailing attitude among the political elites as well. Just the fact that it's all right if you starve as long as we feel better.
Yeah, and that's what I'm getting at. I'm not getting at the Easterners who are also you know, dealing with a war, and you know, fair enough, no one's saying anything like that. What we're dealing with is the Western politicians who have decided that all of a sudden they're going to drop every other piece of rhetoric and jump into the Ukrainian bubble because that's where they can feel safe. Because if they have to face up to things that have gone on in the West, well, they start to look pretty bad. If we go to the next one, we have Marjorie Taylor Greene calling him out on this and just being like, so we're funding a proxy war with Russia. Nice to admit it, I suppose. And then she goes on to say, how does this help Americans? And it's not a question to be asked.
How will this help us sell burgers? Oh, burgers?
Burgers? Not involved. And then if we go to the next one, we have Dan Crenshaw's response, which is still going after that slot on Russia today, huh?
That's not known.
No, I don't get this. Like, her asking, okay, can we admit we're in a proxy war is a fair question. And then asking, well, how does this help Americans is also a fair question there. So, great. Right. So, also the fact that he didn't actually answer the question of how does this help Americans, of course, didn't bother.
Well, I don't think it's something that's really crossed his mind in this whole situation.
No. If we go to the next one, we have the response to this, the typical response I saw, which is people just posting as stonks.
Mm.
There's your stonk portfolio. I wonder
if he's got anything invested in Raytheon.
No, and there's also the question, obviously, with the Ukrainian proxy war, because that's what it is, and, you know, these things happen, and they're geopolitical points, and blah, 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 not going to get into it. But the point is, more fundamentally, well, how much more money? Like, how much actually are we prepared to give? And also, what does victory look like in this instance? Is it Ukrainian victory of taking back all their territory? Are we going to fund until that happens? Are we going to fund until there's a, you know, weird peace agreement between those two? Or what? Are there any actual objectives?
Is it until we launch a counter-offensive against Russia or something?
And that's a fair question to ask. Mm. I mean, you know, you can have all the sympathy and all the geopolitical, you know, needs and blah, blah, blah. But to ask, okay, well, what does victory look like here for the West? That's important. And, well, Tucker Carlson asked this point and just absolutely nails it. Let's play this clip from his show.
The United States Senate voted to advance another $40 billion to Ukraine in a spending bill. Only 11 senators voted against this, all of them Republican. Now, no one knows exactly where that money is going, but we can be certain it's just the very beginning. Behind the scenes, leaders of both parties have agreed that, yes, we are at war with Russia, that we will prosecute that war until we, quote, win, though no one is willing to define what victory looks like, and that the United States government is prepared to spend up to $3 trillion to defeat Russia. Now, you didn't know this because no one is saying it publicly, but privately they are saying it. You have not been consulted. The public support for this is pretty much around zero. You can't afford to fill your car. There's no baby formula, but we're going to spend up to $3 trillion fighting Russia without a vote? You know who's excited about this? Of course, the people who are selling the weapons. And that would include retired four-star General Barry McCaffrey, another left-wing general who was for some reason taken seriously. He just tweeted this image of Ukrainian air defenses, quote, nailing Russian aircraft. There's just one problem. That image is not from Ukraine. It's from a video game called Arma 3. It's from a video game from Barry McCaffrey. And of course, Max Boot, who's a war expert, retweeted it. Oh, it's so exciting. It's literally a video game. And that's how they understand war, as a video game.
Yeah, to be fair to them, though, Arma 3 is a great game and also very realistic.
That might be true, but still, yeah, he's got a point there, which is that these elites are so disconnected from everything that's going on that, yeah, it might as well just be a video game to them.
Yeah, but the most fundamental point being, well, what does victory look like and how much are we willing to give? And Tucker says, apparently, $3 trillion.
Yeah. I feel like Build Back Better, the original like 1,000-page bill, was going to be, what, like $2.5 trillion? And then they went, no, we don't want to do that. And Joe Manchin stepped in and like blocked it. It seems that the Biden administration...
Sloops from the chat, I don't know.
Yeah, it seems that Biden is really desperate on just spending trillions of dollars pointlessly.
Well, trying to destroy the American economy. I mean, it seems purposeful at this point.
Is he an accelerationist? Is that what's going on? He's a secret dissident?
Secretly based, I don't know. Probably not. But if we go to the next one, he also went on to, Tucker here, went on to insult Dan Crenshaw as well over this, calling him Eye Patch McCain over the idea that he's willing to spend endless amounts of money because foreign war. And well, that's the relation to the previous segment as well. But Crenshaw responded to this, and he said in a Fox News interview, saying, "The arguments that our side is making is very depressing, and they are almost pro-Russia. People are saying we can't put baby formula on our shelves, but we are sending money to Ukrainians. My response is that, do you know how much baby formula you can buy with $40 billion? None. Because it's not a money issue, it's a manufacturing issue." No, it's not.
What?
I mean, this is just wrong. It's an importation issue. Like, yes, the United States production of baby formula has stalled because of a problem they had with formula killing babies. But the rest of the world has baby formula, would happy to sell it to you, but federal rules deny it. And I'm absolutely right on this, because we go to the next one. We can see this in real time. I mean, this is Ron DeSantis' press secretary making point here that baby formula from Europe was being denied to be sold in the United States because of weird federal rules that make no damn sense. And if we go to the next one, we can see just the data, just absolutely here. Lifting these restrictions would solve the problem, it seems. And it also seems what the FDA is already promoting. Almost 98% of the United States baby formula comes from domestic manufacturers, with the 2% that's imported mainly coming from Mexico, Chile, Ireland, and the Netherlands. The devastating shortage was sparked by a recall of formula from Abbott Nutrition in February, which provides 43% of U.S. stock. Makes perfect sense. They can't send the baby formula, you got a 40% shortage in the United States. Well, guess from where? But you only import 2%. So okay, just import more, you would think. Well, no. The FDA insists that it is not reducing health and safety standards in order to expedite import approvals, but would be more lenient in other technical requirements, such as formulating on labels. The FDA says it's permit agents to apply discretion if a foreign manufacturer does not list its baby formula ingredients in the exact order prescribed by the FDA regulations, for example.
Jesus Christ. So they're going to potentially manufacture this shortage just because your ingredients aren't labeled in the right way.
The Fed is doing this because of their own stupid rules.
End the Fed, for the love of God.
Yeah, I mean, this is another great example of just like federal rules that make no sense. Why are they in there? For no goddamn good reason. And then you have a tragedy like this, which is you have to recall the baby formula. 43% of it goes missing, obviously. And then you can't import it. Why? Because the ingredients aren't in exact order we'd like.
Yeah, these sorts of rules are purely in place to keep some federal bureaucrat busybody in a job. So I'm the guy who checks the order of baby formula ingredients.
So Dan Crenshaw, just wrong. You can buy a lot of baby formula for $40 billion. Just get rid of the federal rules. It's that simple.
Dan Crenshaw also towing the common line nowadays that if you're pro-American, i.e. you don't necessarily want to get involved in a proxy war, that means you're pro-Russia.
Yep, simple as that. If we go forward, just try and end this off real quick, which is just the fact that the aid keeps increasing as well, because originally Biden saw $33 billion, and then if we go to the next one, of course that bumped up to $40 billion, and now maybe $53 billion. And why won't it go to $3 trillion? There ain't a reason. It may very well do. Tucker may be completely right on this.
Don't expect the government to limit themselves.
Yeah. Also, the $53 billion that's being sent now, I don't know how it made up that much, because it apparently includes the $30 billion sent previously, is now 81% of Russia's defense budget. So you would feel like job done there if you're sending that much cash. But there's also the point, if you go to the next one, Marjorie Taylor Greene making the point that, well, does the Ukrainian soldier actually get all this money? No. Don't be silly.
Of course not.
No. She mentions in here there's loads of non-profits, NGOs being set up. They're all getting these grants in Ukraine, and the majority of them have people on their boards who are families or friends of senators and congressmen. I mean, color me shocked. I mean, who would be surprised by this? But that's where your money is going. But that's the point. I mean, obviously, any other time, the West's interest would be to fight a proxy war in Ukraine to weaken the Russian Federation. You know, it's just geopolitics, just pure geopolitics. That might make sense at any other time. But given the scale of the mismanagement that's gone on in the West, I mean, it makes this fetish and the abdication of duty to Americans or Britons, so forth, just weird. And if you don't believe me, I can put it in the words of the dear leader and his dear bots. If we go to the next one, we have Joe Biden's words. We don't have a food shortage problem. We have a leadership problem. Yep. 100%.
Oh, wow. We should vote for this guy.
If you appreciated that segment from the podcast The Lotus Eaters, you can go to lotuseaters.com to get access to all the premium content we have on the site, such as Academic Agent's new book, The Populist Delusion, and the book club that Harry did on it. And also, if you want to follow what else we're putting out, you can follow us on Getter at lotuseaters_com on Getter. Thank you and goodbye.